All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Tuesday, January 23rd. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James.
All right, they got a new one today. All right, we're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com. For short, head on over to the site. As always, DFSR.com/NBA. We'll get you that free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Free for 3 days, and then just $34.95 a month after that. That it's going to give you optimal lineups for DraftKings and FanDuel filters to filter out for some GPP needs. We have some updates coming to the site soon that's going to help you work on some upside features as well. So we're excited about that. So go check that out, and it gives you also access to our member chat room where we're talking about basketball. People are in there all day, basically talking sports, and then in earnest leading up to lock with news and notes and how injuries affect lineups and so forth. So go check that out. Like I said, dfsr.com/NBA. Buddy, I am working on not very much sleep right now, so forgive me if...
Wait, what happened? Why you got a little restless last night, up late watching Netflix? What happened?
We made a horrible decision to have another kid is what we did. Like things were going real damn smooth around here and that now. So hopefully my kid doesn't... turn 16 and then figure out that I did a podcast and go back and listen to episode, I don't know, 101 or whatever. Yeah. Whatever this is.
Guaranteed to be a fragile little snowflake who gets, probably need therapy just by knowing that her dad was on a podcast anyway,
She is getting a lot of basketball watching him because it's prime. Actually, the one upside, it's not really an upside, but the one good thing with timing is like the way our timing schedule is working out right now is that like I'm up from like, I don't know, let's say 9:30 to like 1:30. And that's like right in face or the other direction as you walk around the room and watch. Last night it was, watch Timberwolves and Clippers or something like that. And like at least it passes the time. So not fully complain. Got a full run of basketball. And she's soaking it in by osmosis, I would say. She was like, oh, man, what's defense by Wiggins there? The hell was that? What the hell was he doing on that switch? So yeah, I can feel it. She's not saying it, but I can feel it. All right, let's get into Tuesday of basketball here. Only 5 games on the schedule, which is a little lighter for a Tuesday. Typically we have 7 or 8. Only 5 tonight, and I think we have some concerns. Not so much with the injuries here. There's a couple team concerns, and then there are some blowout concerns as well. So we'll try to wade through how we kind of deal with that. The other weird sort of thing with the schedule is that there's a 7 o'clock game, and then the next game doesn't start till 8. And the only reason, so if you're listening, if you're not really that in tune to DFS or kind of just stumbling upon this podcast, the reason that matters is because you just give a longer runway with which to get news. And so when you have one game that maybe doesn't feature a ton of injury news to begin with, and then you have to wait a minimum another hour for the next game and then 2.5 hours for the late games, you do run some risk of teams reporting an injury or something like that later. Right. And so that's just something to keep in mind for tonight, that there's a little bit of a weird scheduling thing in the way that the schedule lines up. And the first game is really the most unexciting of the bunch. It's Sacramento goes in and plays Orlando. Sacramento is still doing this carousel of we don't know what the hell we're doing, so we're just going to play random guys. Like Vince Carter started the other day. They basically sat Zebo. It looks like Vince Carter's doubtful tonight because he's one of the on the roulette wheel of veterans that doesn't get to play tonight, and so Zebo does get to play. I mean, we've complained about this before, but the Kings, are we just full stayaways except for GPPs? I'm not even sure GPPs, they have a ton of upside, but I mean, are we still just in firm full stay away on the Kings?
I think so. You don't really get paid off for guessing right on the Kings a lot of times either. Like, you're like, you know what's going to happen. Ska Labissiere is going to come back and like get more minutes than people expect. And then he does great. And you get like 20 or 30 fantasy points, which is fine of 5,400, but nowhere near worth the potential downside if he doesn't come in on that. So I think, unfortunately, the Kings really from top to bottom, just on the basis of either minutes uncertainty in guys like the power forwards, or just now too high price based on some relative security in guys like Willie Cauley-Stein, you basically and Bogdanovich, you just need a lock stock matchup to even consider it for big tournaments, and you don't have that here. So yep, so stay away.
Yeah, and even when they shuffle the starting lineup around, like I said, Vince Carter started the other night, Justin Jackson started 2 games ago, it doesn't matter. They just play 20 minutes. They bring some of the guys in off the bench. The only guys you get even upside on minutes are the two guys you mentioned, Cauley-Stein and Bogdanovich, and at times Darren Fox. Like those are really the only three guys that you can really look toward and say these are long shot candidates to play mid-30s minutes. They're most times are not going to, but every once in a while they will. And it's really only those three guys. Nobody else is given a chance to really do that. On the Orlando side, You know, they're 6.5 point favorites. Orlando has some fantasy viable guys on their team. One of the guys I'm interested to hear about is what your opinion on is Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon is a guy that our system is going to take to most times, I think, because his fantasy skill set is just does line up usually pretty well with what you're looking for in DFS. But he's really struggled over the last couple of games. So 5 for 17 from the field last game, 7 for 20 from the field the game before. He's He's 3 for his last 20 from three. I have a feeling when I look at these kind of numbers, I don't know. Do you want to Aaron Gordon? He's never going to be like a great 3-point shooter, but where do we stand on a guy like him that has as much fantasy upside as anybody in the game, really?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I view his upside a little differently than you. I think 8,500 is simply too expensive for him. And I think if you go down basically his entire game log since he's returned from injury, he's got two good performances on these prices. Well, three, I guess, if you include the Cleveland game the last time around. And that's not really what I'm looking for. The minutes kind of go up and down. They seem to have settled in like the 37 to 38 range, but the performance hasn't really followed. He's doing almost nothing on the defensive end. Let's see here. Yeah, four of his last six games, he had no blocks and no steals in any of those games. That's just not really what you want in the current FanDuel paradigm. So, yeah, Sacramento is not a very good team, but they also play pretty slow. So I would prefer not to play Aaron Gordon today.
Yeah, I love Gordon. And I know that that's probably an unpopular thing, but I think that where you're buying 8,500 is a little expensive.
At an all-time high price for the season, but just not performing at his all-time high. What's the really love here? I'm just confused.
He's running very bad from the field. Let me say this. I thought he was a little bit cheaper. So I'm going to walk back my statement a half a step here because I thought he was more like 8,000. So I'm going to walk back half a step with that because the price is not as advantageous as I thought. I'm not sure if he got price corrected because of the matchup with the Kings here, because he was not this expensive last time around and he did not play all that well. He's only shooting 20% from three over like the last month, and he's like a 31% 3-point shooter for his career, which is not great. He did shoot and he's actually shooting 35% on this season, which started. He was incredibly hot to start the season, and he's been very bad of late. I think if you're looking for him to fall more in that 32% range, something like that, then he has a lot of threes kind of in him, and you know, and if you cluster them together, you have a lot of upside there.
Threes, but he's doing so badly recently. He has doubled his threes for this year, and the percentage is up. But yeah, to your point, a lot of that was based on, I think, just early season run good. But if you look at his whole, you just take his whole season at sort of surface level, he's averaging 34 fantasy points a game. Terrible on these prices. He averages about one fantasy point per minute, which is fine overall, but not if you're going to play 37 minutes and your price is 8,500 in what kind of, when it all gets added together with the pace of play and the bad defensive play, Sacramento is like a slightly better than league average matchup. So it's a short slate. You may just wind up playing him anyways, but nothing to be excited about from my perspective.
Yeah, I think I'm maybe just shooting on the upside for him, and just mostly because I think that there, like I said, I think there's some signs that there are things that could regress back to his mean, and I think that's the case. He is coming more in like the mid 40s worth of fantasy production, and I get that that's not crazy great value. Like I said, I was a little bit wrong on what I thought his price was. Other guys on Orlando, Jonathan Simmons didn't play as many minutes last game. They are still running Fournier and Payton out there for significant run. Again, Sacramento's a slow team, but they're still not a very good defensive team either. Do we want to consider any of these other guys possibly in cash?
I think you could look at some of the guys that at least get consistent minutes here. Jonathan Simmons is a guy who probably is a little bit too cheap if his real minutes are like 32 to 35 minutes per game. Obviously, that didn't come through in the Boston game, but that Boston game, you know, anytime you're going up against Boston, they're slow. They also play really tough defense. The blowout risk is there. So I don't take too much stock in that. But I do think that his price will continue to climb. He was 6,000 when everything was healthy, and he was, you know, just kind of firing on all cylinders. I think Evan Fournier is probably playable too. It seems like his current rotation is around 35 minutes per game. I think he's sort of a favorite to put in that sort of 5x points per dollar on the $6,300 price tag. It's just going to come down to if you really want to play these guys on a day where Brooklyn's playing, where the Lakers are playing, where they're legitimately great matchups instead of merely good ones like you see here.
Moving into the 8 o'clock game, we have Cleveland goes in to San Antonio. So there's a bunch of news and notes for this game. I'm going to start on the San Antonio side. So recently we get the news that Kawhi is going to be out. I think he's now without a timetable to return with a shoulder injury, which is terrible news for the Spurs. He had been kind of working his way back from injury and then kind of in and out. And then there seems like there's some discord also with how it's not really relevant for DFS purposes, but there's discord about how his injury process has been treated. So a little bit of a riff in a team that usually doesn't have like these kind of riffs. Not really. I mean, short of LaMarcus Aldridge getting asking for a trade, but this is usually a team that seems like things are always going pretty well, at least on the home front for them. To have Kawhi being upset about sort of like maybe how he's been treated into some internal struggles is really, really very rare for the Spurs. That being said, it's not really relevant for our DFS purposes. What is relevant, though, is Paul Gasol is going to sit tonight. He's already been ruled out. Joffrey LaVarnway started last game for him and played something in the mid-20s minutes. Do you see him sort of in the realm of Greg Monroe last night? We get a kind of a randomish starting center coming on the cheap. On a short slate like tonight, do you see LaVarnway as maybe the highest owned player on the whole slate? Like, the news came in far enough in advance. I think most people are going to have time to evaluate this. Assuming he starts, do you think he ends up becoming one of the, I mean, maybe the highest owned guy on both sites?
Certainly could. LaVarnway is kind of unexciting on a points per minute basis. Like, he hasn't really been doing a lot within that Spurs offense this season, but 25 minutes for him, I think, would put him in the easy playable range. It's worth noting that he played 25 minutes the last time Gasol sat, but only played 12 minutes the time before that. So, you know, that was also, I think, maybe his first overall game of the season. So maybe they were kind of trying to wait and see what they had, or at least it was the first game for quite a long stretch. So yeah, I think LaVarnway, just because he enables so much here and there are so many good expensive plays in excellent matchups, that end center just in general is kind of a bad position, and today certainly no exception. There just go up and down the teams that are available: Golden State, New York, LA, Oklahoma City, Brooklyn, Boston has a real center, Orlando doesn't, Sacramento doesn't really. So there are so few center options that I think he enables enough that you can just live with 15 points if he gets that. But yeah, I think he'll be a very highly owned play.
There's some chance they don't start him too. I mean, Cleveland is a smaller team, so you don't really need to always run out of traditional center against them. So hopefully we get some news and notes on who they plan to start. I doubt they would like shift Aldridge to the five or anything like that to start the game. I think most teams like to start with that traditional center if they can, and then sort of just migrate away from it as the game flow goes on, depending on sort of where they are. So we'll have to keep our ear out for that. But otherwise, without Gasol, without Kawhi, obviously, and a lot of the Spurs up to the season stats are without Kawhi anyway. So I think we have a pretty good sense of like what this team is like. Anything else you like to get for the Spurs here against a Cleveland team? I mean, last I checked, they were second to last in defensive efficiency, and I will check that while I'm finishing the sentence, but they are awful on defense. Second to worst. Only Sacramento is worse. And actually, this may not even been corrected for this OKC game. So there's a chance they might just be the worst defense in all of basketball. Anything else you like for the Spurs?
Yeah, I mean, I think Kyle Anderson, it continues to be interesting. We threw him out there as a play against Indiana and Toronto, actually, and he paid off in spades. And he's doing that largely on the back of probably running hot on the defensive end, but he could still produce on these prices. Again, it's not a super exciting price for him. We were only had to pay $5,100 for him like a week ago, so can't be over the moon about it. But I do think he provides solid production here. And then the other guys, you know, the Spurs do bring a level of uncertainty that I'm not so super fond of here. Just not mostly on the basis of minutes for the non-Aldridge category. And then Aldridge, the major concern with him is just price. $9,500 is a lot to pay for a guy who's averaged 39 fantasy points per game this season, and he really went off cliff in that Indiana game. So I don't think you're going to see much cash game ownership there. I do think there's upside just on the basis of Cleveland's poor interior defense, but yeah, not a cash game play for me.
And the other thing I forgot to mention too is they have shifted, and it seems like a permanent shift, shifted Deontay Murray into the starting lineup over Tony Parker. So it didn't really spell a lot of minutes for Mark Murray. I don't think he's going to be a guy that plays 32. You can get away with it in this matchup though, because again, the defense in Cleveland side is bad. And if they see him as a defensive upgrade over Parker, which he likely is, and he's to play him against Thomas is going to help. And then he's just not going to get, Thomas offers nothing in the way of defense too. So I think there's some chance he stays on the court a little bit more. So he's starting, and I'm not sure it totally moves the needle. Cleveland, like I said, is a complete mess. They've lost four of their last five games. They got completely blown. They let up 148 to OKC in regulation on Sunday, which is like, I mean, OKC is a good team and all, but to allow 148 points to a team without an overtime is, I mean, God, that's like two overtimes. Like, it's just embarrassing. Like they like, and Kevin Love leaves. So they have their own Discord. Kevin Love leaves that game early because he was sick and ended up leaving the stadium. They had a team meeting yesterday that basically called out whether or not Kevin Love is sick. That doesn't matter so much as it mostly just points to this team is just a complete and utter mess right now. Like they have a defensive unit in Isaiah Thomas. If they play Isaiah Thomas and Kevin Love together on the court, they're arguably the worst defense. And it counts that they have a great defender in LeBron. It's just how bad these two other guys are. I just don't even know what to make of them right now. I want to trust that like guys like Love are going to play 30 minutes and Thomas is, you know, working his way up to 35. And they just have such huge problems and going against the Spurs here too, that I'm not sure we end up playing any of these guys in cash tonight. I don't know. What are your thoughts here on Cleveland?
I think the Spurs defense is simply too good. There's too many good matchups tonight. The Spurs play the second slowest pace in the league with the top three defensive efficiency. So I don't know why you would prioritize a team that already like has some struggles putting up fantasy production on their current prices.
I think you can get away with Thomas at 6,000 on DraftKings, and he'd probably be the only guy, at least on first glance, unless they made some kind of shift in the starting lineup. Like if they decided to bring Love off the bench and move Thompson to the starting lineup or something. I don't know. Like that didn't seem to work against OKC because they still got blown out even when Love left. So didn't really seem to matter at all. But I think Thomas's 6,000 price on DraftKings is palatable, and I'm not really so interested in anything else in this team. Before we get to the next 8 o'clock game, hit us up with a sponsor here.
Yeah, let's talk about FantasyFactor.com. Fantasy Factor is a great place to go DFS big salary cap game format games like you're used to without the huge entries from the sharks that you see out there. So our users have really liked Fantasy Factor for that reason. It's a great place to go and just put in, you know, $5 to maybe $100 per night and just play a more casual seeming game where you won't see 90% ownership on certain plays here and there. So check out FantasyFactor.com. I'm sure they'll have another great NBA free roll coming up this Friday that you can check out. Get your feet wet. Get some money to put into play, and I think you'll enjoy your timing.
Now, the other 8 o'clock game is the OKC Thunder and the Nets. It's in Oklahoma City. They're -9.5 favorites. If you run lineups right now on our site, Westbrook is coming in to every lineup. It's a good matchup, a fast paced game. Second highest overall team total on the night. Do you see? I mean, our system certainly does right now. Sees Westbrook as just like sort of the must play big money guy. And there's a lot of big money guys here. You have Westbrook, Durant, Curry, LeBron, and that's really the big ones. Really, Westbrook, Durant, LeBron are the guys over 10 or 11,000. But do you see out of that group of guys, do you see Westbrook as just the cash game play tonight because of the matchup?
I think so. And I think just based on recent performance as well, people were already kind of warm on Westbrook. He had back-to-back not-so-great games against Sacramento and L.A., but that was mostly a minutes concern based on odd game scripts. Came out against Cleveland, had the 20 assists, which seems pretty good. I'm not like a math person necessarily, but 20 assists in a single game seems like a lot.
Well, score of that game was like the freaking all-star game. Like it was like there was no, that this is what you see when the West plays the East.
That's because he was setting up everyone with those insanely easy opportunities. Like, I don't know if you watched the game as closely as I did, but I was just seeing all those people. It's sort of an outlier there. Nonetheless, 12,000 is a lot for what you want to play on Westbrook, but I think there are enough cheap plays to supplement playing him here. And listen, Westbrook's at a price point now where you probably only want to take him in really good matchups, but Brooklyn certainly qualifies. And with some of the other blowout potential on today's slate, I think for my money, he's the safest big money play as well.
Yeah, it seems like it. You have other options here in George, Mello, and Adams. They've all been somewhat price corrected. They're all getting pretty expensive. I mean, Adams is up to 7,500. I think George is up to, George is only 8,000. I can see people playing him at only 8, though the production has been sort of hit or miss on him as well, even though the minutes have basically been there. Anything else to like about OKC? And then we can switch over to Brooklyn.
Yeah, OKC is just kind of tricky because, you know, guys like Mello, the price at 7,200, it reflects this recent performance that he's put in, and it's been good on a points per dollar basis, but the guy's playing 28 to 30 minutes a game. I just don't know if you can pay $7,200 for a guy who just doesn't really pay that price reliably on a 30-minute timetable. And then George, it's a kind of a similar story. The minutes, I think, should be there in a normal game script. I know he only played 32 against Cleveland, but I believe that his normal rotation is more like 35. That's an expensive price tag for him normally, but totally doable in an absurdly good matchup with Brooklyn.
Yeah, the last two games for the Thunder have been blowouts, so like they did buzz off some of the minutes, although Westbrook still played 35.
Which is not for everyone, so that's the weird thing for me, but yeah.
I think they get caught in rotations because I think that like Westbrook, the way he rotates, he's on the court enough that Well, like he plays the whole entire third quarter and they kind of work Melo and George out of it. And like, that's, I think, part of the problem. I'm not 100% positive on that. I do know that they do stagger their minutes toward the end of the first quarter, but not on Westbrook. Westbrook plays the entire first and entire third. So in that way, the blowout is less of a risk, I think, for Westbrook than it is for the other guys. And I think that's, and look, you're not, I'm not like making anything new here. Westbrook is just like the best player of the slate. It's just a question about whether or not you want to play, you want to pay all the way up for him. Brooklyn, sure. They do have D'Angelo Russell back, who's coming off the bench. Their minutes have not trended toward anything over the course of the season, have not trended anywhere toward the realm of safe. Dinwiddie is still playing over 30 minutes a game. I thought that would dip down with Russell coming back, but that hasn't really as much. Really, they're just not playing D'Angelo enough to probably totally cut into it. Anything you like here? I mean, you have Dinwiddie, you have Ronnie Hollis-Jefferson coming off a pretty good game. They have guys, so, you know, Damari Carroll that can play every once in a while. I'm just not sure this is the spot.
Yeah, it's probably not the spot. Oklahoma City, a bottom 10 team in terms of pace, top five or top 10 team in terms of defensive efficiency. That's not really the spot where you want to play a team that has such inconsistent minutes concerns already. So I'll probably pass him.
Like I said, Jefferson's interesting mostly on power forward because there's so few power forwards in this slate. Like, you're paying up for Aldridge, you got to pay up for Gordon. Like you said, Melo is already kind of overpriced. You do have a couple of the Boston, like you have Tatum, maybe we can talk about him in a second, but I think that's where you maybe would get away with Jefferson, in that the position is just pretty thin overall, though. I think a pretty unexciting team. And Damari Carroll's been really good in the short term. So even if you give him minutes, his price is up to like 6,000. We had him at like low fives, something like high fours, low fives as late as last week. And now that price has been corrected because he's been pretty good. New York goes in a 10:30 game. New York goes in and plays Golden State. Golden State minus 14 favorites here over the Knicks. How worried are we? That's a pretty high line. That's not a scientific statement or anything like that. Of course, the high line. Minus 14, though, is that in the realm where we start when, you know, you and I do a lot of minutes auditing, and one of the things we try to trend is close games and as opposed to blowouts. Does minus 14 strike you as time to tick down the Warriors here into maybe average minutes or even below average minutes, worried that these guys don't see the fourth quarter?
Yeah, I think so. On guys like Steph, I would probably put him at like a 33-minute median here in an average game against New York. And that probably does take him out of consideration. New York is a bad defensive team. There's no question about it. But that's also reflected in the line here. And we know the Golden State, with their really good but somewhat fragile guys, I think all these guys except for Clay have had significant injury like question marks around them over the last couple of years. So I imagine that they'll be, I've observed that they've been more conservative with minutes and blowouts than a lot of teams. So yeah, I would prefer not to play these guys if I have other options. It's just that they are also projected for a lot of points overall, their team. And so for that reason, you might not be able to escape the team altogether. So I think that's kind of where I'm landing now. I think you could play a guy like Durant, for instance, who seems to be a part of every blowout. I'd be a little bit more cautious with Steph, although, you know, point guard is a little bit dicey, so maybe you wind up playing him anyway. But yeah, I think you have to offer a little bit of downward guidance on the minutes, 5-8%, something like that.
You could probably get away with no Steph if you just go like Westbrook and Irving. Like, there happens to be just a couple other point guards that fit the, like, that are in good matchups that also maybe have a little bit of blowout concerns, but not as much, and their price points are just fine. So I think that's the reason that you think you can get away from Steph. And I think I'm with you on Durant. This is a good match. They have no one. I mean, look, no one has a team that really can match up with Golden State. So it's not sure. Really a knock on the Knicks here. But they have they definitely have personnel problems when it comes to both point guard and small forward, just in terms of defense. So yeah, I think you're just asking yourself, where do I want to land in their minutes? We had Durant at 37 minutes. That was probably too high. So I ticked him down to 35 or 36, Steph down to 33, 34. And that's going to, they'll probably end up jumping up the lineups just a little bit. We'll see after we update this. On the Knicks side of the ball, I mean, they have the same kind of blowout things. They're not a team that's going to run their starters out there if they're getting waxed. They've shown that in the best of times, they're not going to play some of these guys outside minutes, outside of Kristaps. Or anyone on the Knicks, anything more than a GPP shot for you?
No, probably not. I mean, it's a fast-paced game here. You can, if you squint real close, you can see upside in guys like Beasley, actually, who, if the game gets out of hand, maybe he winds up seeing outsized minutes. It wouldn't shock me at all to see Beasley a part of overall GPP winning lineups. But otherwise, I think you're just taking on too much risk. And to say nothing of the fact that when it comes to the Knicks, the minutes just might be at risk for reasons beyond your comprehension in the first place. Like maybe Kristaps plays 43 minutes one game, but plays 28 the next, you know? So you don't know what the plan is with the Knicks. And that makes it actually this is a good learning moment, I think, overall. So when you don't know what the plan is for a given team, the people that kind of affects the most are the high priced guys, right? So if a guy like Porzingis, sure, he might have big time upside on those price points, but the downside is so considerable if the minutes don't come in that it makes him a really, really tough cash game play. Just because investing versus a guy, say, like, I don't know, the Knicks actually don't have anyone that's a great example here. But if there was a guy like 4,900 who sometimes played 25 minutes and sometimes played 35 minutes, sure, he's going to kill you, but it's just a lower all percentage of your salary. So the risk is not quite as great.
And that's like Beasley. Beasley will play 10 minutes and then he'll play 25. The thing, he's such a points per minute beast that if you catch him on the 25 night, 4,800 is a deal, right? Like it is.
Yeah, he should score a point, fantasy point per minute or more. Yeah.
Right. So you're getting, he actually scores, I'm taking a look at this, he actually scores a lot more than fantasy point. He scores like 1.2 fantasy points per minute or something like that, some insane number. So if you are going to catch him on the right night, go for it. And, you know, and then you have like your Courtney Lees of the world. He actually is 4,900.
And I think he's pretty steady. You know, he was a guy, right, I was going to actually bring up, and that's why I said that price point. I think he's a pretty steady minutes contributor. I just worry about the blowout for him. So, but in a fast-paced game, like, he's the guy you could stomach that risk, I think.
Yeah, it's funny because when you run lineups on our site right now, Beasley's actually close to a cash game. This really speaks to the nature of the slate, and this is likely going to change. But Beasley at 20 minutes right now is close to a cash game play at small forward just because of how some of these other matchups are sort of shaking out. So if nothing else tells you about what this Tuesday slate of games looks like, I think that's a pretty good indicator. The last game is Boston goes in and plays the Lakers. Lonzo Ball is still out. So the injury news is here that we're going to keep an eye on. Ball is still out. It hasn't really mattered because they played Tyler Ennis and then brought in Jordan Clarkson. I'm gonna get to Clarkson in a second. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is questionable with this Achilles strain. So those are the two things there. And then Kuzma only played 10 minutes last game, but he is probable to play. So I think that was precautionary. He left the game early after 10 minutes and didn't come back in, but he is going to play. And then Brandon Ingram is going to play. Let's start on the Lakers side of the ball. So Ball is out. Jordan Clarkson over the last two games has been, he's been like peak Steph Curry. Like he's been so good. Now they've been bringing him off the bench, but they've been playing him 38 and 34 minutes. He's taken a combined 30. So he's averaging 19 shots per game. He's not going to keep shooting 68% or whatever he's shooting from the field.
I don't think so.
But the 38 and 34 minutes, that's really what I'm looking at here for Clarkson. It's hard to tell if his minutes are coming as a direct comp to Ball or to KCP or to both. And I tend to think it's both. Like it's the fact that both of them are sitting because they can move Clarkson back and forth between point guard and shooting guard. Where do we want to set his minutes? Because I think this is actually the question of the night when it comes to making lineups. He's been great. The minutes have been elite. It's also the Lakers. And I think, and his price has come up. Like this is the thing I struggle with the most. It's like where to set Clarkson's minutes. Because if you give him 35 minutes, he's a play at 7,000, right? If you give him 30 minutes, you could get really, really burned. And he's the kind of guy too. If you look back through his game log, I know I'm going long-winded here. If you go back to his game log, 21, 17, 30, 14, 14. Like you can get really burned on the price too. So this is the thing I think that people ask themselves this question the most is where do we stand with Clarkson going in tonight, especially not knowing the KCP news?
I would set him at 33 minutes, I think. I think that Indiana game is probably representative of what they would like to do in a game that stays relatively close and where he's playing well. And I think that you're going to take on some downside risk. I think there's definitely a 30 in him there. But given that things are going well currently, I think the Lakers try to stick with it. I do think the 37 minutes is a little bit ambitious. It's a point you made, I think, about Lou Williams in the past, where 37 minutes is like almost the literal ceiling of minutes that you can play if you don't play the first 6 minutes of the game or whatever. So I think that's kind of the concern for me at setting Clarkson anywhere above the 33. I think it's possible. And when he's utterly shooting the lights out and just dishing and grabbing boards like he has been the last couple of games, it's in play for sure. But that strikes me as more of the extreme high end than the low end. I think a very reasonable concern here too is just the matchup. I mean, Boston playing the best defense in the league this season, also playing a bottom 10 pace. I think that dings Clarkson a little bit for me. It's also just makes me squeamish to pay the highest possible price over the course of a season. But again, short slate, a lot of tough matchups. In case you haven't caught on to the theme, you might just wind up playing them anyway.
Yeah, and just as a note about Clarkson's rotations, and I was guessing this, but I just looked it up to make sure, he does not come in until the 8 minute mark. Well, excuse me, the 4 minute mark. So 8 minutes into the first quarter, right? So now you're left with
There's only 40 minutes left in the game.
Exactly. You're left with 40 minutes left in the game. Now, last game he played 38 of those 40 minutes. And so and they left him in. But you're asking a lot. Like, you are asking for and you're asking a lot from a team that we've seen Luke Walton in the past. Like, Luke Walton, it helps them that they're trying to tank, because Luke Walton, more than most other coaches, will just remove guys immediately for defensive mistakes. Like, he does it with Julius Randle once every 3 minutes, it seems like. So that's why his minutes get burned off. But if you make defensive mistakes, he just like just takes you out of the game. It helps their overall, the overall gestalt of the team, because they just want to lose. So if you want to give reasons for guys to leave games, it's easy when you can just kind of yank them. The other guy I wanted to throw out there in this kind of same idea is Julius Randle. Randle played 37 minutes last game. He's a guy with pretty high minutes upside when he's playing. And we've seen 37, 20, 23, 22, 34 minutes. That's his last five games. Yeah. If we're setting his minutes, where do we? And the reason I'm asking you this question is because this is the thought process we go through on a day-to-day basis. What do we set minutes at? Because it really matters for projections. Where do we land with a guy like Randle, who seems to have some of the same concerns? At least he starts, though.
Yeah, he does at least start. I think Randle is a little bit dicier to me. I mean, he can go from 20 to 36 minutes in a heartbeat, and that's really not where I want to be for cash game purposes, particularly in a not-so-great matchup with Boston, and particularly against a team that could prey upon his weaknesses and kind of exploit him in some ways. He can be a sloppy defender in terms of rotations, that kind of thing. I think he can really just piss the coach off, too, when the effort is a little bit lower, like when he played against Oklahoma City and just got one rebound in 23 minutes on the court at the center position. So I think there's too much risk for me on Randle. The center position is bad, like I mentioned earlier. So if you don't want to play Joffrey, then don't. But outside of that, then it's just a big tournament play only.
And over on the Boston side, they are -5 road favorites here, and against the Lakers team that represent a pretty good matchup. Now, Lakers, like we've said this in the past, Lakers have played really pretty good defense this year. They're top 10 in defensive efficiency on the season. So it's a they've made dramatic strides in defense. This is not a complete rollover team like we had seen, you know, basically for like the last 5 years coming out of LA. This is a team that actually can play real defense, but you make up with it on volume because they still play at one of the fastest paces in the league. I think they are still playing it. Yeah, they are playing at the fastest pace in the league. So it kind of, it does even itself out. How many of the Boston guys are we looking at here? We're going to need to probably play some of them. Kyrie is there, Tatum, Marcus Morris did start last game, still only played 26 minutes. His price has not come up a ton. Where do we stand on Boston?
Yeah, I think I love the Boston guys today. It's kind of interesting when you look at the Lakers, because, you know, the real difficult thing always is trying to weigh pace and defensive efficiency properly and trying to construct projections. Defense first position has its own flaws, but when you look at defense first position on the Lakers, they are in the top 10 in terms of fantasy points allowed to every position this season, except for point guard, incidentally. And, you know, point guard has been kind of this carousel situation, and you know, guys coming and going. You also have issues with KCP now out of the lineup, so they're a little bit different against backcourts in general. But I think that, you're still going to wind up playing Boston guys. I mean, basically every game besides this one that actually involves any good matchups has significantly more blowout concern. And given that this is the tightest spread among the high total games, I'd be thrilled to play as many Boston guys as I could today.
Yeah, Kyrie coming at 8,500. That seems like a deal.
His minutes are up too. Kyrie's a great play today.
Jaylen Brown at only 5,500. I can see him being a popular play at small forward, especially if you think he's going to see 33, 34 minutes. Tatum, 30. He doesn't really play a ton of minutes. Like, they do manage him, and he is getting a little expensive at 5,600, but still probably in play. These are the guys you're going to want to target probably. You know, they're not like over the moon points per minute fantasy guys, just because Kyrie is a huge usage guy. They play sort of a slower pace. Like, they're not, Boston has names, but they're not necessarily as good on a fantasy level as I think most people think they are. Like, I think their names ring louder than their actual fantasy production.
A lot of that's because of the early season production, right? Like, some of those guys like Tatum and Brown were positively going off. And I think that kind of has stuck in people's memory for whatever reason.
Right, exactly. Like, they're on a good team. They were very good in the early in the season, kind of came out of nowhere with the Hayward thing. And that has leveled off to some degree. So I'm not, you know, they're not like auto locks for me, but they are priced pretty nice in the mid 5,000. So I think you're going to see plenty of ownership on the Boston guys tonight. All right, we're going to get out of here. Went a little longer than I thought for a 5-game slate, but we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com. for long got a guy.
For sure. Yeah. Nice. You almost got there, buddy. You almost got there.
Oh, man. I just killed the perfect episode. I was doing great. All right. DFSR.com/NBA will get you that free 3-day trial. So go check that out. Member chat room, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. You're all set to go. Free for 3 days and then $34.95 a month after. We'll be back again tomorrow talking a full Wednesday in the NBA. Buddy, enjoy your Tuesday.
Peace.